Ted Kooser's daily walks in the pre-dawn winter light became the basis for his book of poems, Winter Morning Walks, 100 Postcards to Jim Harrison. Each of these short pieces is an ode to the frigid Nebraskan landscape. And now these poems have taken on a new life as the inspiration for a piece of music written by Maria Schneider. She's typically celebrated as a jazz musician, composer, bandleader, arranger, but her latest album, Winter Morning Walks, is a collection of classically influenced song cycles. It features the work of the St. Paul and Australian Chamber Orchestras, a trio of prominent jazz musicians, and the Grammy Award-winning vocalist Dawn Upshaw. And I'm very pleased that it brings Maria Schneider and Dawn Upshaw to our studios now. Hello.
Hello.
Maria, I read that you struggled with playing Mozart on the piano when you were younger. Is that what got you into jazz?
Well, that's what got me into composing, maybe, rather than playing. But jazz, I don't know. I found my way to jazz. I had had a wonderful jazz piano teacher when I was a child.
In Minnesota?
Yeah, she was a stride pianist, extraordinary, and an extraordinary classical pianist. And the only reason she moved to my town was she was from Chicago. Her husband and son both died in a month of each other, and her only living family was a daughter in my tiny town, Windom, Minnesota. And so she went there to be with family.
So it was just a lucky coincidence.
Well, yeah, her horrible misfortune.
You could have studied with Bob Dylan's father if you'd been inhibited.
Everything would have been different.
Dawn, didn't you also spend a lot of time in the Midwest when you were young?
I did. That's where I grew up, outside Chicago. And kind of surrounded by folk music of the civil rights movement.
So I would have thought that Maria was influenced by the kind of gospel music that Garrison Keillor sings on Prairie Home Companion. But do you think that your Midwestern roots might be a reason you were attracted to these poems and this music?
I think definitely why I was attracted to Maria's music for the first time. I couldn't identify it right away, but we have a lot in common there. She grew up a little more in the countryside, farmland, but our Midwestern roots are strong.
Well, how programmatic did you intend this to be, Maria? Did you want to conjure up images of the Midwest?
You know, I think that in my writing, that's what I'm doing involuntarily half the time when I'm writing. I think that my music is largely about the place where I'm from. I think
whatever you're composing when you're doing jazz pieces,
a lot of my music, yeah, has this open landscape, this broad image, and a lot of it brings up stories and memories and pictures from my childhood.
Does it work that way for you too, Dawn? Does it conjure up images of the Midwest for you?
This music, certainly in Maria's music, I think what I just try to describe to people, because it's nice to try to articulate it, is this joy that I hear and openness and generosity in Maria's music. And it connects really deeply.
Well, how did you connect? I mean, this is not the first piece you've commissioned from Maria.
No, I was introduced to Maria's music through a colleague of both of ours, Osvaldo Golihov, another composer, and he had given me Maria's CD, Concert in the Garden, and I just, like, I truly fell in love with this CD. I was listening to it night and day, taking it on trips, and I started hearing Maria's band live every Thanksgiving time at the Jazz Standard. I started taking my daughter. It was an annual.
The Jazz Standard here in New York.
Yes, here in New York. And finally, I had introduced myself to her, and finally I had the courage. I thought, why not ask her to write for me?
Well, the first piece that Dawn commissioned you to write, Carlos Drummond de Andrada's Stories, also appears on this record. What brought you to de Andrada's poetry as a starting point? And is poetry often the starting point for songs?
Well, I have to tell you, these are my first songs, really, you know, with vocalists.
Well, Schubert and Schumann sort of did it well.
Yeah. I was looking for poetry that maybe was a little bit more narrative than a lot of poetry. Something that, because my music has that storytelling element, I think I wanted that in the poetry. And I went to a friend of mine, Lucia Guimarães, and I said, I'm looking for poetry, and I have the feeling I'm going to find it in Brazil. What's a Brazilian poet that has poetry that feels very human, very regular, very like real life? And she said, oh, Carlos Drummond, you're going to love his poetry. And then she right away said, there's one that's John loved Teresa, who loved Raymond, who loved Mary, who loved Jack, who loved Lily, who didn't love anyone. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this sounds perfect. This is what I'm looking for.
And, of course, I mispronounced his name.
That's okay.
It's, well, you know, the first time Stephen Colbert was on the show, I introduced him as Stephen Colbert, so I'm famous for doing those things. Dawn, did you lay out any guidelines for these commissions?
Not really. Through my experience now with composers, I have found that the best music, it's kind of like writing a book. You know, you have to tell your own story, and I don't want to get in the way of that. So I wanted Maria to choose completely on her own. I didn't really want to get involved in that process.
Were you at all nervous that Maria might have you scat singing at the end of the record?
No, because I told her from the beginning, do not ask me to do that. I will not do that well.
Well, you do utilize vocalese in the prologue of the piece.
Yes.
Is it common to use that kind of technical crossover between jazz and classical singing styles for you?
Is it common to, sorry?
Well, you know, there's a technical crossover involved in this. And this is a kind of a borderline thing. Mm. It's kind of jazz. There is improvisation in the piece, isn't there?
Yes, there is some.
Yeah. In Winter Morning Walks, there is, yes.
I think that vocalese, for me in any way, is different than kind of a scat improvisation. So the freedom, the improvisatory aspect for me had more to do with timing and responding to the players.
But you're not doing improvisation a la Billie Holiday.
No.
Definitely not.
In a review of a performance of de Andrade Stories in the New York Times, Anthony Tomasino said that you sang like a jazz vocalist leading an orchestra. Do you see yourself as a leader in that situation?
No. No, I think that I feel at home in these pieces, deeply, deeply at home. And so it's more about the conversation, musical conversation I'm having with the players.
Well, the musical conversation is with a jazz trio and with an orchestra. Mm-hmm. So the jazz trio is improvising, but the orchestra is playing written parts.
Yes, although the trio is sometimes playing a lot of written things too. The feeling I had after doing one piece with Dawn, I said to her, Dawn, I really want to, when she asked me to do another one, I said, I want to do something where there's improvisation around you, where if you do it from performance to performance, it changes nightly. And so one of the things that I thought to make it not really feel like it's improvisation over something written was to have this malleable time that Dawn was talking about, where she can, it's not so metered, but kind of spatially notated. So she can move things along, or if somebody's improvising behind her, they can slow it down or speed it up and she can follow. And the whole orchestra, too.
Well, I want to play a little clip from when I switched on a light.
Okay.
Because that's
a good
example.
This.
When I switched on a light in the barn loft late last night, my frightened four flickers hanging inside, peering out through their holes, confused by the light. They began to fly wildly from one end to the other. When I switched on a light.
And so the piano is, and the drummer, and the
or no, or no drummer, let's see, bass, piano, and then bass clarinet. So the bass clarinet, he's improvising. He knows the tonality of the piece. The piano player, I've given him the notes he's playing, and he's damping with the left hand the strings, and then he's playing those notes kind of in his own rhythm and own order. And then there's the viola player who's playing the low note on the piano. He's damping with his left hand on the harmonic nodes of the strings and then whacking the note with his right hand in his own timing. So he's improvising the timing of those notes.
One of your first major jobs, as I understand it, was working for the great composer, arranger Gil Evans, another jazz musician who often wrote for larger groups. Did some of this thinking grow out of that experience?
I think Gil's music influenced me so much long before I even knew him. And I would say what I loved about Gil's music and what I feel maybe about my own music is that it's not really classical meeting jazz, but it's Gil was a person who loved classical music. He loved jazz. He loved flamenco. He loved many different things. And they all kind of fused within his personality, and it became Gil's music. And that's what I hope about my music, that it's not a clash of two worlds trying to meet and wrestle with, you know, being friends, but that it's really something that becomes something else.
Well, musicians often tell me that in order to make it into the music business today, you have to play every style. But I wonder if that's all that new. I remember the old days on the Ed Sullivan Show when an opera singer, Helen Traubel, would come on, and she'd sing Climb Every Mountain or something like that. She wasn't going to sing some aria. Is there always the attraction of doing something other, Dawn, for singers who basically are opera singers?
I actually have a fear of trying to do something that is too far outside of my own experience.
Well, this had to have been a real stretch for you.
Well, it was a little scary, I have to admit, but at the same time, you know, I knew that I had such a strong response and connection to Maria's music, and I wouldn't have gotten to that point of, wow, shall I ask her to write something for me? What would she say? I wouldn't have even taken that step if I hadn't spent this time imagining doing that. But there are definitely kinds of music that I would, you know, worlds that I would never want to step into.
Well, what about you, Maria? This is your first recording with the major orchestra. How does it compare with recording with a jazz big band?
Well, the recording process is different. But I had a wonderful producer, David Frost, a wonderful engineer, Tim Martin. And I really did, normally I produce my own records. And I really felt that this is another realm, the way it's recorded, the sound. And I really wanted to learn from masters of recording.
Is it difficult to find classical musicians who can adjust? I remember in the early days of when Charlie Parker was playing with strings, or early rock records, where they had to find special string players who could play like that. Now everybody's grown up with that music, so perhaps it's less of a stretch for them.
Well, you know, that music was largely swing music, and what I've written here is really, I think, more coming out of a classical world than a jazz world, actually, in terms of rhythm. I don't know. I think more musicians are more versatile these days. And the Australian Chamber Orchestra that did the piece with the trio, they don't use a conductor. They play standing up. Everything is based really on, I think, Dawn works with them a lot, listening and feeling together. So I think they were perfect for this project because that's the way they approach their classical playing.
Yes. Is it all that different than Miles Davis playing for Gil Evans? In the end, it's still a soloist with a band behind him, orchestra behind him.
Actually, you know, Miles was improvising a lot less than people think. on those records. The beginnings and the endings of his solos were written, and then he'd improvise coming out of them. So maybe it isn't that far of a stretch.
Don, Ted Kooser, who wrote the poems, the text for these pieces, originally started taking his walks to recover from cancer treatments. And in the liner notes for this recording, you share a story about your sister, Dana, and her first time hearing the piece. Would you share that
with
us?
Sure. Dana, it was actually the last concert that she went to, the premiere of the Ted Kooser poems. And she was in the middle of her second round recurrence of breast cancer and chemotherapy. And so it was, I knew she struggled to get to that concert, and it meant so much to her. She actually was a bit involved because she was at the time doing some of my work with me, and kind of business manager work. And so she was involved in some of the details, and she was determined to get to that concert. She couldn't. It was right before intermission, the piece, and she was so overwhelmed and touched by it, she had to sit and stay in my dressing room. She said, I can't hear anything after that.
Well, I read that you had your own bout with cancer in 2006. Do you ever use the memory of something like that to find an emotion in a performance, or would you rather not revisit that?
It's with me all the time. I don't have to go anywhere to revisit it. It's just a part of me, and it's reflected, I think, in various ways through everything I do.
Now, Maria, your big band has won the Downbeat Critics and Readers Poll for the best big band a number of years in a row. You've also won in the composer and arranger category. But I was wondering, who's your competition these days? In today's musical climate, are there many other notable big band leaders who also compose and arrange?
Yeah, there's a lot of people, and it's funny because I always feel guilty, especially about that arranging award, because arranging is a special art, and it's taking a standard, to me, arranging is not really orchestrating, but it's taking a standard piece and really reforming it. And there's a guy who I just got a record from, John Hollenbeck, that did beautiful, beautiful arrangements. I think it's called Songs I Like a Lot. Mm-hmm. And I was just so impressed with what he did. And I thought, okay, now. And Gil Goldstein, he's an amazing arranger. And there's really, really a lot of people. And Vince Mendoza, Jim McNeely.
But arranging also has to do with finding ways of voicing the different instruments and making them work together.
Yeah, it is.
And I mean, then work with a voice in this case.
Yeah, there's many different levels of it.
In 2004, you became the first musician to win a Grammy for a piece of music released exclusively online. And and you were a pioneer in that.
Yeah, well, I would say the company I did it with was the real pioneer at Artistshare. Brian Camilio runs that company, and it was his idea.
Is that like Kickstarter?
Well, it predated Kickstarter by a few years, so I would say Kickstarter is more like Artistshare. But Brian had this idea to, he said to me, what's the one thing nobody can file share? And I said, I don't know. And he said, the creative process. What if people pre-order your music, and while you're making it, you document your whole process of making a record? And then they can follow along through video when they log in, exclusive content. And we did it, and it worked amazingly well. And people came in on the executive producer, gold, silver, bronze level, composer participants that get scores, and I talk about how I compose. And it worked so well, and I did it with my next record, and now I did it with this, which is very unusual to do it. I don't know that anybody's done anything like that with major orchestras.
Well, Don, you you were on a record that achieved international fame, sold over 1 million copies since it was released in 1992, Henrik Gorecki's Symphony No. 3, the Symphony of Sorrowful Songs. Was that in any way similar to this experience here?
Not at all. I think, that felt like this very personal experience that, and everyone involved sort of assumed that it wouldn't sell, you know, more than 10,000 copies.
Well, because classical music doesn't sell today as it used to.
No. And so we were really just in our own little world there, and all of a sudden this thing sort of blew open. So, that was just wild. That was a wild experience.
But it also gave you permission to try other things?
Sure, sure.
Well, I'm so glad you tried this. This music is beautiful, and my great thanks to both of you for being with us, Dawn Upshaw, Maria Schneider. The CD called Winter Morning Walks. We're going to go out with actually the quadrille from the De Andrada story song cycle, which is also on this Winter Morning Walks recording. I thanked you both already, didn't I?
You did, but thank you.
Well, thank you again.
We haven't thanked you. Thank you very much.